Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the Texas legislative session is getting closer to wrapping up. Is there any progress on gun safety, abortion exceptions, and making the grid more reliable? And the battleground over Texas history is now at the Texas State Historical Association. Can the state turn away from the old Lone Star myths and towards the facts of the state's founding? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Texas legislature is approaching its final days of the legislative session. Bills have died and frustrations are mounting. Texas Senator Roland Gutierrez, a Democrat who represents District 19 that includes Uvalde, says it appears like little will be done to pass gun safety laws.
We saw the bill, the age limit bill, moving through the House in committee. The committee was heard the bill. They voted on out of committee very late. Unfortunately, the chairman of that committee held up the paperwork and it didn't really get beyond into the calendars committee. And that's sadly not new to the Texas legislature to be playing politics with this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, playing on the heartstrings of these people. I've made it clear, very clear to them from the beginning what kind of an uphill battle we had, but they are persistent. And they're going to keep fighting for their children. Yesterday, we had another amendment that came out in the House. Unfortunately, that didn't go through. They knocked it out. The Republicans knocked that out as on a point of order. I've had several amendments in the Texas Senate where Dan Patrick has essentially killed those issues from coming up on the Senate floor. You know, the Republicans don't want to talk about the reality, and the reality is that they've made Texas more dangerous by their loose gun laws.
As you know, the Uvalde families, they've been going to Austin, lobbying, talking, trying to get some movement going. How are they taking the fact that it doesn't look like this is going to become law?
I think that they have been, first off, let's be clear about their successes. The Uvalde and sadly the tragedy that happened, but also the family's efforts. They were able to pass a federal law last summer that hadn't been passed in 30 years. Now, some would argue that that law probably needs a little bit more teeth, a little bit more bite, a little bit more protections. That's true. But we did get some significant changes, especially when it comes to juveniles and also domestic violence. We need to continue to move forward at the federal level. They're going to come back to Austin. And they're going to continue to fight. They're not. What's most interesting about these folks is that they stick together. They work in concert. They're a family. I'm part and proud that they've allowed me into their world. They're my friends, and I love them, and I respect them. And we're just going to keep fighting to make sure that we keep Texas safe as best we can, because right now Texas is not safe. Our children are not safe. It doesn't matter how much money you put into school hardening if you don't go at the common denominator, and that's guns in the hands of children, 18, 19, and 20-year-olds.
Meanwhile, we still have more mass shootings. As the legislature in Texas is not able to do anything about it, there are more mass shootings. And we had one recently in Allen, Texas at the mall. We had a neo-Nazi with 8 weapons he was able to buy legally. But we are learning that the shooter, Mauricio Garcia, was discharged from the Army after just 3 months. And we're not able to determine whether that was for physical or for mental issues. That seems to be something that needs to be understood better, because we saw with the Sutherland Springs mass shooting that Devin Patrick Kelly was discharged from the Air Force, and he for his behavior and mental issues. And when he was able to buy the weapon that he used for that shooting, he was the military was found liable for that shooting, and they had to pay $144 million to the family. So Garcia, the Allen, Texas shooter, had to fill out the form, the federal form 4473. Everyone has to, when you buy a weapon illegally from a federal gun dealer, on that form you have to list whether or not you've had any been treated for mental illness. So that didn't turn up on his forms. Is the Army negligent by not counting the discharge for Garcia, which would have prevented him from buying these weapons? The same problem that the Air Force had, which they were found liable for Sutherland Springs.
Yeah, listen, I think that you absolutely have some negligence with regard to the Army, just like we saw in Sutherland Springs with regard to the Air Force. You know, government entities have to do the right thing, and they have to get it right, especially when we're dealing with people that have this kind of mental illness. But the state of Texas is equally as liable, and I'll tell you why. We saw 77 minutes of failure in Uvalde. The failure in Allen, Texas, is a little bit different and a little bit more nuanced. But listen to this. After the Walmart mass shooting, this governor and the lieutenant governor, they established something called the Domestic Terrorism Task Force. They talked about it in a press conference last week. They said that the task force was going to meet quarterly. That shooting, a Walmart shooting, also a neo-Nazi type shooting, occurred in 2019. They met for two quarters. A station up in Dallas just followed up with DPS and followed up with the governor's office. They only met for two quarters. So it is abundantly clear to me that Greg Abbott likes to pay lip service to these things, likes to tell people, well, it's not guns, it's mental illness, it's not guns, it's white supremacy, and we're going to set up the task force, and we're going to create a unit at DPS to go track the online rantings of these neo-Nazis. And here yet again, we see the Department of Public Safety fail because they were the unit, the specific unit, which is called the ICT counterterrorism unit, failed to spot this guy. And so we've got to be looking at the common denominator, which is guns in the hands of mentally ill people, guns in the hands of young people that shouldn't have them. But Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick and everybody like them don't want to talk about the most important thing that's killing our kids, and that's guns.
The kids are in school. They need help coping with these issues with qualified counselors. Instead, Texas is going to make it easier for schools to hire chaplains in public schools. The chaplains, the question of their qualifications and why a chaplain rather than a qualified student counselor, psychologist, what is happening with that?
Let's look at that piece of just garbage, just this ridiculous idea, and let's compare it to other states. Tier one counselors is what you want in your schools talking to your kids. We have a ratio of 650 to 1 in Texas. The national average is 200 students to one counselor. 200 students to 1 is the national average. In Texas, it's 650 to 1. These people simply do not care. They pay lip service to these ideas. They tell people in Texas, I've got you. They tell people in Texas, you're secure. We've got your back. And we all now know, David, that this is this whole notion of a Texas miracle, this whole idea that we're protected from the bad guys, it's about an inch deep and a mile wide. There is no security blanket in Texas, and the Republicans have created the chaos that we are now living in.
So moving towards putting chaplains in public schools rather than qualified counselors, is some people see that as Texas continuing to shift towards a religious theocracy form of government. And we see that also, we heard some vague promises going into this legislative session that there would be some exceptions put in the abortion law for preserving the life of the mother or for rape and incest. Yet that has not happened. Is that going to happen this legislative session?
No, it is not going to happen because the people in power in this, Republicans that dominate the legislature, including the governor and lieutenant governor, don't want that to happen. Texans need to wake up. because before you know it, you're going to be living in a dictatorship where information and communication is thwarted because people don't want you to know the truth, like we've seen in Uvalde, like we've seen in Allen. How is it that in every other city in this nation, when there's a mass shooting, we get the information immediately, we get the videos immediately, we're told what happened, who was responsible, and who the victims were? Here we are in a year into Uvalde, and we've heard nothing from the Department of Public Safety that's substantial. We've had no transparency and no accountability.
Well, back to the Allen Mall shooting, people were saying that there was a attempt to cover up or slow down the release of the information that who the shooter was and his affiliation with neo-Nazis.
And, David, I think that the reason for that is because it took us to connect the dots. What happened in Allen is what happened in the Walmart in El Paso. Two neo-Nazis killing minorities. That's exactly who the victims were in Allen, minorities. And so here we have a situation where the governor 4 years ago says, I've got your back. I've established this great committee that's going to stop the spread of white supremacy, that's going to stop the proliferation of their online traffic, and we're going to find the bad guys and we're going to go get them. That never happened. They met twice. We are living in a state where Republicans are simply lying to us and expecting us to follow along like lemmings. This is not the Texas that I know. We need to move forward. And we need to get rid of these people, vote them out, because that's really the next step. And we need to have people of conscience, Republicans and Democrats, that are going to go in and make sense of the chaotic situation that these leaders have left us in.
Voters were expecting that the legislature would continue to try to improve the electric grid. We recently heard from ERCOT a summer assessment that there would be a deficit of energy generation, and that they would expect the renewable energies to make up that deficit. Also, a new report out by IdeaSmith, a nonprofit that looks at clean energy, says that renewables have been saving Texans billions and billions of dollars each year. Yet the Senate passed SB 624, which would require the licensing of solar and wind energy units. And if they do not get these licensing, that they will be pulled out of the ground. Yet these same licenses are not required for any fossil fuel stations. So is Texas trying to fight against and pull clean energy out of the ground as we depend on it to keep the lights on and save money?
The Republicans are. Yeah, there's a coal course bill, which is another Republican trying to get, you know, challenging solar. Solar is a very viable and efficient way for us to get energy. You know, certainly we have some problems with the wind, but it's still capable, and it still should be part of our energy mix. These people don't want to do anything that's not in their economic interest. The fact is, if you look at the stuff on guns, if you look at the stuff on energy, it is all about, you know, who's lining their pockets. It's pretty sad where we are right now. We have energy fixes that the governor's proposing, energy fixes that the lieutenant governor's proposing, and in the end, it's all about money and who's going to get paid, rather than looking at the interests of Texans, making sure that we have an efficient energy grid for us, and making sure that we're going to be able to afford it in a proper way. Instead, they would rather figure out which one of their favorite energy friends is going to get paid.
Texas State Senator Roland Gutierrez is a Democrat representing District 19, which includes Uvalde. It is reported that he intends to join the U.S. Senate race to challenge Republican Senator Ted Cruz. The push for a school voucher-like program in Texas has had a lot of momentum this legislative session. Republican leaders may see their long-held wish for private school choice paid for with public dollars succeed at last. The idea of using public funds for public school tuition has been around since the 1950s. The most well-known origin is that it was the brainchild of Milton Friedman, an economist who championed free markets and also the deregulation of the banking and finance industry. Many of his ideas have been debunked, but many states' first voucher programs were actually designed to circumvent desegregation. Texas Public Radio education reporter Camille Phillips tells us Texas almost joined them.
In 1957, the Texas House approved a bill that would have given any family that withdrew their child from an integrated school a, quote, tuition grant to attend a private school. The bill was part of a package sent to the state Senate with one goal, keeping schools segregated by race.
Taken together, they all were designed to really thwart Brown.
Historian Greg Michel with UT San Antonio says southern states across the country passed similar bills after the Supreme Court ruled school segregation unconstitutional.
Which is why by 10 years after Brown, something like 1 or 2% of schools had made progress towards desegregation.
In the mid-50s, Michelle says keeping schools separate but equal was part of the Texas Democratic Party's platform. In 1956, the governor sent Texas Rangers to Mansfield, Texas, to block the integration of the high school.
Completely in defiance of a court order, and so there was very little political will.
But a small group of state senators managed to derail the passage of most of the segregation bills in 1957, including the voucher proposal. San Antonio's Henry B. Gonzalez, Texas's first Latino state senator, and Abraham Chick Kazin, a Lebanese immigrant from Laredo, led the group in a 36-hour filibuster.
The senators who supported the segregationist laws sought for ways to stop the filibuster, and they couldn't do it. And they eventually negotiated and caved.
Now, decades later, voucher supporters' arguments have flipped. Instead of helping white students leave an integrated public school, modern private school choice advocates say vouchers give students of color access to private schools that can better meet their needs. Darrell Bradford is president of 50CAN, an organization that supports local groups advocating for school choice. He says getting a scholarship to a private school was the best thing that ever happened to him.
I want every kid to have the same kind of opportunity that I had. Sometimes it's your neighborhood school, and that's great, and sometimes it isn't. And the color of your skin and how much money your parents make and where you live shouldn't be the things that determine that.
However, people who oppose vouchers and education savings accounts say they hurt students of color.
There's no civil rights protections if you're a special needs student.
Jaime Puente is with the left-leaning think tank Every Texan.
If you learn that you have some kind of learning disability, you're on your own.
Puente says he understands wanting Black and Latino students to have access to prestigious private schools. He went to a Catholic boys' school in Houston, but he doesn't think vouchers or ESAs will give them that access because they don't cover their full cost of tuition.
These schools cost anywhere from $25,000 to $35,000, almost $40,000 a year. And so that's never going to be an option for the poorest student with the voucher.
Puente thinks that money would be better served supporting public schools.
We should be talking about investing in the system as a whole so that we can lift everyone up.
Bradford argues that an ESA worth, say, $8,000 would make it easier for a private school to raise scholarship money to cover the rest. He says public schools are just inherently unequal.
We have a system of public schooling in this country that is based on place. And we have a system of place in this country that is based on race.
Bradford thinks ESAs can help level the playing field for low-income kids of color by giving them access to an education that isn't based on where they live.
That aren't hardwired with all of that inequity or with labor incentives or teacher assignment policies or whatever that mean that a kid who probably needs the most resources and the best teacher is least likely to get both.
However, research shows that school choice hasn't made segregation any better. In fact, it's often made it worse. Huria Jabbar teaches education policy at UT Austin.
Initially, there was some hope that choice, because it breaks up these ties between where you live and where you go to school, that there could be a potential for greater desegregation, but that we haven't seen that happen.
Jabbar says there's robust research on the impact charter schools have on segregation, and the conclusion is clear.
Individual charter schools are generally more racially segregated than the traditional public schools in their area.
Jabbar says public schools are still the best hope for integrating schools.
There are a lot of efforts underway. There are some places that it succeeded. And so we lose the potential to do that.
She says it's important to keep working to increase school diversity because it's the one thing research has shown improves student outcomes consistently.
We don't have evidence of another policy solution that can make schools equal and high quality on such a large scale.
Jabbar thinks ESAs and vouchers will most likely also have a negative impact on school diversity. But Bradford isn't concerned by that. He says segregation caused by school choice is, quote, less pernicious because it is not government mandated.
It is instead things like Black families wanting to be in an environment where they feel like their kids are going to be affirmed and not for nothing, their history not erased in a public policy fight.
That fight over erasing Black history, that's actually something public school advocates see as an excuse for vouchers made by people who want to erase that history.
Vouchers have been and continue to be a product of white supremacy.
Jaime Puente with Every Texan made that point during testimony this legislative session. He says the fight against segregation vouchers decades ago has reemerged as a new battle over books and curriculum. Distrust of public schools is a key part of Governor Greg Abbott's argument for using public funds for private schools.
Schools are for education, not indoctrination.
Huria Jabbar also sees parallels between the push for segregation vouchers in the 1950s and the language voucher advocates use today.
After Brown v. Board, it was about avoiding racial desegregation. I think right now it's the desire to avoid public schools that are talking about race or the history of racism in this country.
She says the recent research showing poor academic outcomes for vouchers might be the reason why some advocates have changed their messaging. I'm Camille Phillips in San Antonio.
There have been many fights over how Texas history should be taught in the classroom. But now the battle is, what is actual Texas history? Were the heroes of the myth of Texas independence really heroic? Did Texas break away from Mexico over slavery, just like it did from the United States during the Civil War? There are competing ideological narratives, and they become the fault line inside the Texas State Historical Association, the independent nonprofit publisher of research material and education programs about the Lone Star State. The Texas State Historical Association produces the Southwestern Historic Quarterly, the Texas Almanac, the Handbook of Texas History, and other material frequently cited as the last word or at least a substantial fact-based and unbiased authority on Texas history. So what happens when the Texas State Historical Association deals in the facts of Texas history and not so much of the myth? Rob D'Amico wrote about it for Texas Monthly.
After talking to the executive director, J.P. Bryan, that he really is making this a symbolic fight for Texas history.
Just a symbolic fight, or could this actually have some bearing over what is taught about Texas history?
Well, in some ways it could, and that's J.P. Bryan's fear. The association does have a pretty big influence on the educational materials published in our state, so he's afraid that this kind of woke wave could impact, you know, what gets into the contents of these publications. He seems to think that there's a threat there, that he needs to protect this glorious history of Texas.
Well, when you say woke, woke is infecting the Texas Historical Association. That's what we're hearing. That's the concern. But woke actually means, in this case, the actual history.
You have a very good point there. You know, everything that's going on the outside of the association across the state with the Texas legislature and, you know, the State Board of Education and our local public school boards, where, you know, far right conservatives have adopted this woke term as, you know, just a catch-all. If you look at the true meaning of the word, you know, it's obviously something that you want. You want people to be aware of what happened accurately in Texas history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. in terms of this outside kind of influence creeping into the association, it's that term that's alleging that there's these academics in higher education that are indoctrinating people and, you know, vilifying our heroes from the past instead of telling history accurately.
There's vilifying, and then there's, you know, looking at the historic record, someone like Travis at the Alamo, and whether or not he was the dashing figure that we see in the John Wayne film of the Alamo, or you find out that he was someone who was running from his debts and from his marriage.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the Alamo because the book Forget the Alamo came out, and, you know, that created a backlash from, you know, more traditional historians, and much part of the discussion at the association. The other really contentious issue is the role of slavery in the Texas Revolution. How much of an influence did slavery have, or trying to protect Texas as a slave, ultimately state, in the, you know, how much did that cause the Texas Revolution? There's a lot of battles over that. And so the association has what they call a chief historian. It's kind of a symbolic figure. They're seated as UT professor of history. The current historian is Walter Benger. And he's been controversial for some of these traditional historians because he's made, you know, comments equating the Alamo to a symbol of white power and white supremacy and things like that. So while some historians, you know, that are more traditional are okay exploring these theories about the Texas Revolution and some of the voices of people from the past that haven't been heard from as much, you know, African-Americans, Native Americans. At the same time, they kind of feel that Benger has taken it too far and that he's not doing a good job representing the balance of the association. So that's part of this power struggle, too. Benger does have a role, though. So the chief historian is supposed to be kind of like the manager of all publishing. So the executive director, J.P. Bryan, is in a head-to-head battle with this guy because he's worried that Benger will, you know, insert a lot of this kind of inflammatory content into their publishing.
Those of us who went through school in Texas, especially like people who are my age, you know, went through school in the 60s and the 70s, we were given the myth of Texas as fact. I think a lot of that still exists. Is wokeism in Texas history just trying to recalibrate away from the myth of Texas and try and get into what the historic documents that still exist that tell us, you know, Texas seceded from the United States because of slavery. Texas became and fought for independence from Mexico because of slavery. I mean, Santa Anna was a bloodthirsty dictator, but slavery was also part of it as well. I mean, these are facts.
You know, I never heard that slavery had anything to do with the Texas Revolution when I was growing up. But there's that rub when it comes down to balance. All the board members that I talked to and the executive director, you know, they said they want a balanced history that looks at, you know, the great things that the Texas historical figures did in the past and the not so great things and frankly disgusting and horrible things. Where you strike that balance that is at conflict here.
Rob D'Amico is the author of the New Texas Monthly article, Traditionalist Protest, What Some Consider a Woke Takeover of the Texas State Historical Association. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. Find past Texas Matters episodes on our website, tpr.org. And you can like, subscribe, and download to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.